Hi everyone, hi Helen, it's great to be back for episode 2 of season 4 of the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod.
Hi Chris.
Hi. We have got a really exciting podcast coming up today. I'm really pleased to be joined by Douglas Hogg, who is a client director at Zedra Governance. Hi Douglas.
Hi Chris, hi Helen, thanks very much for inviting me on.
Pleasure, no, really good to be talking with you and great to be speaking to another Scottish pensions trustee because you've been seeing a lot of us and our colleagues and different Burgess Salmon people for different reasons because we've got 5 lawyers now based up in our Edinburgh office, and it's a thriving market and been good to be collaborating on different bits and pieces, hasn't it?
It is indeed, and great to see the team expanding up here.
Yeah, absolutely. And long may that our collaboration and work together continue. So today's episode, really exciting. We're going to be talking about the Mansion House speech from the Chancellor on 10th of July 2023, and in particular, the proposals for using defined benefit assets for investing in productive finance. So without further ado, let's start the podcast. So, Douglas, the Chancellor set out a series of measures to boost outcomes for savers and increase funding liquidity for high-growth companies through reforms to the UK pensions market. So, that's the first question. Could you just give us a bit of an overview, please, of the Mansion House proposals, the policy context to them, and what's the proposals for using DB pensions assets for productive finance?
That's great. Thanks, Chris. And I think at the start of this topic, it's really important. We use the term productive finance, and certainly across the industry, we're hearing more and more people use this term. So it's probably worth starting off by saying, what do we actually mean by that? Perhaps the best definition, I think the most relevant here, is what the government thinks it means. And certainly in the call for evidence that came out immediately following Mansion House, the DWP defines productive finance as investment that provides equity capital and finance for businesses in the UK, including startups, infrastructure and private equity, as well as longer term investments, typically in illiquid assets.
So things that will be around for a length of time.
That's right. A combination of things that are seeking to help boost the growth of the UK economy, and also things that will be around for a long time in terms of those longer term infrastructure projects.
Yeah,
and when we think about that policy context you talked about at the start, it's probably worth reminding ourselves, how have pension schemes investment strategies changed over time, and how are they actually using these types of assets at the moment? And of course, over the last 20 to 30 years, we've seen a huge shift in terms of the investment strategy of a typical closed UK DB pension scheme. So in particular, the regulatory framework really is focused around de-risking. Mm-hmm. So over that time period, we've seen big moves out of equities into bonds, and at the same time, out of a UK bias into more diversified global type approach. And then on top of that, I guess, if we think about the past year, not all, but the majority of pension schemes have seen big improvements in their funding levels. And as such, more schemes than ever are closer to that potential final endgame of an insurance company buyout. That's led to more de-risking. And indeed, where schemes have held some of those illiquid assets, those longer-term assets you talked about before, often they've had to try and sell down some of those illiquid assets with the view of being more insurance-friendly and insurance-ready.
Definitely seen a massive burst of schemes looking to buy in and buy out over the past year or so. But we are seeing more innovation in considering the alternatives as well. So I know that Burgess Salmon have a team that are working with startups and scale-ups, particularly in the tech sector. So we're actually looking to launch a B-scale platform that supports companies with a range of documents for scaling a business and lots of information and knowledge around that. It's interesting seeing the alternatives be considered as well as moving straight to default that you're buying in your scheme.
So it's like seeing that. Douglas. It's like seeing the two sides of it, I was going to say. So you've got your, what we're seeing with the B-scale app is, ability to help clients scale up if they're a new business, that sort of thing. And then from the pension side, as Helen says, sort of complete innovation. We're seeing clients start to prepare for buying and buyout, but see what other options there are for running a scheme on, which is all of what we'll get onto now as well.
And I think that context is so important, because with all these schemes of getting closer to buyout or the end game, you know, for a long, long time, the mindset for trustees and employers has been that, you know, we often hear the term a buyer is the gold standard. Mm. But I think with the innovation you're referring to, we're finding more schemes at least pausing and asking the question, it might well be the right answer for our scheme, but actually let's think of all the options that are out there. And I think, you know, that policy context you're talking about in terms of, you know, why is the government looking at it now?
Yes.
It's because these schemes are better funded. That sort of transition into the insurance framework is going to happen very soon. So in any way, if something is going to change, it has to happen now. And of course, for the government with that huge growth agenda, they see the UKDB private sector market, which is, you know, still over $1 trillion in size, as being a potential source of capital.
Yeah.
And so I guess, you know, from their context, they're trying to think, can they incentivize some of those assets into this sort of productive finance approach?
Yeah, absolutely. And worth saying as well that that concept could apply equally to all sorts of types of schemes, for example, DC. But our discussion today is focusing on using DB and generating surplus in those assets and investment from private sector DB schemes into productive finance. So you mentioned there what's the incentive for following the government's proposal? So how do you incentivize DB investment into productive assets?
So I think, again, in terms of, you know, the key stakeholders, let's think about the employer's perspective and also the trustee's perspective. Mm-hmm. And you, as a trustee, the focus for my scheme is rightly on protecting the accrued members' benefits. Yeah. And so for the majority of schemes, you know, you've got that insurance as being sort of an option that's a well-trodden path. From the employer's perspective, the risk's quite asymmetric. And again, there's no real benefit to the employer in terms of running on this scheme. Actually, they only sort of focus more and more on the downside risk. So in my mind, the only way you can sort of incentivize more investment in these types of assets is if you sort of change the rules of the game effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. So which rules would you change?
Well, I guess starting from the employer, because really to get more investment productive finance, we probably need these schemes to decide to run on rather than transfer into insurance framework. So for the employer, well, how can we make that risk less asymmetric? And some of the types of ideas that are being considered are, do you make it easier for schemes to be able to extract a surplus if one's arisen before the scheme's wound up? Do you
Sorry, just jumping on there. I know that recently in the Telegraph, they had an article suggesting that the tax on surplus, return of surplus to employer, might be lowered to potentially even 25%. So that definitely would serve as an incentive.
I think that's absolutely right. So at the moment, if you could get a surplus out as an employer, then, you know, it's a 35% hit. Whereas I guess with all sort of tax incentives in this particular way, if that was reduced, then that would again perhaps encourage some employers to keep on running on the scheme.
Definitely.
Some of the other things we're sort of seeing some schemes do is to think, well, actually, if there is a surplus, even if as the employer you can't get it out of the scheme, is there a way to effectively recycle some of that surplus to perhaps increase or subsidise the cost of DC provision?
Which is easier to do if the DC provision's in the same trust at the moment, isn't it? But that could be something that with legislative change, it could be a condition on a return of surplus from a DB scheme for the employer to use it for particular purposes, one of which could be DC provision under another scheme or another trust or a contract-based arrangement or whatever.
That's right. And as you say, at the moment, it's almost a bit of a lottery as to do your scheme rules actually have the DC in the same trust or otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so some sort of standardized framework to allow that to be more of an easier route to go down might, again, incentivize that type of approach.
It's also a lottery around what your rules say about the ability to return surplus anyway. So it's a lottery as to whether your DC is there and what you can use surplus for. It's a lottery as to how you're able to return surplus, because you've got a lottery as to who holds a power, say, to return a surplus on wind up. You've got a lottery as to what rules say about returning surplus on an ongoing basis. And of course, schemes with that power at a particular time had to do a Section 251 resolution in order to be able to retain that power. And, you know, hopefully all schemes that had that power and wanted to retain it did do that. But that, you know, element introduces a bit more, you know, variation in approaches from different schemes. So, you know, what, as well as the tax change, I guess what we're saying is another change could be simplification legislation overriding schemes rules that says surplus can be returned to the employer subject to these conditions.
That's absolutely right. And we said that the employer was one side of the equation when we think about it from the trustee's yes. perspective. Again,
yeah.
you know, my role as a trustee is looking after the interests of the members of the scheme. Is there a way that the members could also benefit if you were to, I guess, re-risk the investment strategy in this particular way? And again, what's been great about the back of Mansion House is we are just seeing more innovation across the industry of ideas. And one of the ideas that also is out there is the, you know, the potential to maybe pay a PPF super levy so mm-hmm. that if something did go wrong with these types of assets, well, your members' benefits might be protected in full rather than, I guess, the reduced rate that'd be covered under the current proposals. So going back to your question, how do you incentivize? Well, we need to almost change the game, both from the trustee's perspective and also the employer's perspective.
Yeah, that's really helpful. And these changes, they might not necessarily be too hard to do because overriding legislation, all right, there's a legislative process you've got to go through, but overriding legislation could be drafted quite simply. And a lot of the conditions, you know, you could insert a particular funding level. At the moment, you can't return a surplus unless you've got a buyout surplus. So, you know, you could retain that and that protects members' interests. So that bit should be, hopefully, you know, subject to the legislative process of changing the law, fairly easy to do. But my understanding is that the tax, you know, ability to change the tax rate could be done by Treasury order. So even easier to change. And yeah, as Helen says, we've got these rumours about maybe that is on the cards for the not too distant future.
There must still be a lot of challenges to doing this. And obviously it's a slow shift, isn't it, to these more innovative approaches rather than the approach that people have been looking to do for many years, and now they're suddenly able to, for example, buy in their schemes.
I think that's absolutely right. And when we think of what some of those challenges are, there may be things we might not initially think about. If there is a surplus, for example, who does that belong to? And that can become an emotive issue. So even if, you know, we can change regulations quite quickly and quite easily to allow this framework, you know, you could still create situations in the future where the distribution and sharing of that surplus can be a bit contentious. And on top of that, as you said, Helen, you know, the mindset for so many people in the industry, be that the trustees, the sponsor, the advisors, the mindset that's been drilled into us over the last 20, 30 years is buyout is the gold standard. So actually, as you said, Chris, changing the regulations might actually be quite easy, but how do we change that mindset? It's probably about giving the industry that comfort that these long-term changes are going to be not tinkered with as we move through time.
Yeah, absolutely. So just thinking of mindset, I'm just looking at my notes here, and you know, we've talked a bit about restrictions and you know, potential challenges and things like that. Perhaps I could just jump to asking you, Douglas, about thinking towards that mindset. What are you, or client, you know, what are you seeing your clients, where are your clients at with their mindset at the moment about, you know, thinking about these sorts of proposals?
So again, it's been great to see the funding level of so many of our schemes improving to the point where they're actually, you know, in a real pole position to make these decisions. I think for a lot of our clients, it's still a case of wait and see.
Yeah.
You know, as a trustee, again, we're thinking about what's best for our members. There is a well-trodden path for the insurance route. But at the same time, people are very open to ways that could deliver better outcomes for members, for sponsoring employers, and for wider society. So we'll certainly wait with bated breath for the statement coming up to find out.
On the 22nd of November, yes.
That's
there's nothing
right,
in the King's speech.
Nothing at all. So we will see if the 22nd, if it's all been held back for then, or if it'll be a quieter day.
And one of the big proposals from the Mansion House speech was super funds. Obviously, Douglas, you'll know, and our listeners will be aware that the first Clara deal has recently been announced. So that's with the trustees of the Sears Retail Pension Scheme. And Clara have obviously committed to providing £30 million of new capital to increase the security of members' benefits. And also the regulator's given clearance for this transfer. Can you comment on the proposals on super funds and how you see this moving forward?
So again, as a trustee, anything which creates more viable options for schemes I look after is very, very much welcome. So we're delighted to see the first transaction for Clara getting over the line. I think, you know, with any new solution, there's always quite a high hurdle for the due diligence to get the first transaction over the line. So hopefully this will be the first of more to come.
Open the doors. Exactly.
And I think what's important to remember at super funds is they're not going to be right for everybody. The, you know, the specific circumstances around, you know, is there a weaker covenant? What's the particular funding level mean that, you know, it's not going to be right for everybody. But for a segment of schemes, this addition of external capital into the pension system to replace perhaps a weaker covenant could definitely lead to better outcomes for members. So, yeah, very happy to see the first transaction and exciting to see what happens from here.
Yeah. And it was really interesting that, you know, as Helen says, there's a 30 million injection and there's been a bit of commentary about, you know, because this is the first transaction, everybody's talking about it. There's been a bit of commentary about the level of that over a £590 million scheme and whether that fits. My understanding, I've read, you know, obviously don't know the detail, but I've seen that there might have been two buy-ins completed already for that scheme before the transfer to Clara. So it may be that some of those liabilities were already secured before, you know, so that what Clara's taking on is perhaps not all of the liabilities in the scheme. And what I've seen that I haven't seen being announced is, you know, what the funding position and what the price was for the deal. I haven't seen that in anything I've read. So really interesting to, you know, hear about the new option for schemes. And as you say, it'll be ripe for some schemes. Some schemes won't be able to consider it, but really exciting that there's a new option out there.
Obviously, another option is that the PPF itself will be a consolidator.
Yes.
Douglas, could you tell our listeners more about that?
Yes, it's really interesting to see the proposals being put out by the PPF. And I think, you know, when we think about the types of new solution being offered, and we talked before about super funds. Mm-hmm. Super funds often used in the breadth of consolidation. But actually, for me, the big thing about super fund is bringing external capital to replace a weak covenant. Mm. And while it's great the first transaction being over the line, I don't think we're going to see super funds, you know, scooping up lots and lots of very small schemes in terms of consolidation. And of course, when we think about the UK DB landscape, there's this huge tail of very, very small schemes. And for everybody who's worked with small schemes, there are a number of tasks that you still need to do. Even though you're a £5 million scheme running a £5 billion, you still need to do your valuation, your trustee reporting accounts, and so on. So the costs of actually running these small schemes are so big. I think that if there is a public consolidator, it could play a part in terms of, I guess, helping all of those smaller schemes to access economies of scale, to get better governance standards and so on. And all of that ultimately could lead to better outcomes for members.
And it's large schemes, consolidated schemes that are, just linking back to the first part of this discussion, it's easier for them to invest long term and to direct investments into productive finance and then UK productive finance. Whereas because of Clara's model being a bridge to buyout, the idea for schemes that transfer to Clara is that within 5-10 years they move to the insurance market anyway. So, you know, Clara's business model is not to run schemes on for a long term into the future. Their business model is a bridge to buyout, so it's not entirely consistent with that government aim either.
That's right. And if we think about almost the segmentation of the market, you know, to be able to run on in a meaningful way and, you know, invest in the productive finance approach that the government might want, you need to be over a certain size to be able to do that in an effective way. Maybe that's over, you know, £400-500 million to be able to do that. Mm. And then for some of those other schemes, I guess, that are smaller in that tail event, insurance is effectively a form of consolidation, but I guess you need to reach a certain funding hurdle to get to that point. So maybe what the PPF is saying is, look, can the insurance market, as we look forward, deal with this huge tail of small schemes? Or do we need to create some other form of consolidation vehicle that would be able to capture them? Now, you know, we're in the situation in the UK whereby, you know, 20% of the schemes have 80% of the assets and so on. Yeah. So all of these small schemes, the combined asset pool isn't, you know, as big as some of these bigger schemes. But at the same time, for me, there's two things going on. One, sure, can you get more assets in terms of productive finance if that's government's aim? But two, for all the small schemes, can you actually create a better governance model to deliver better outcomes for the members?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure the PPF would be a you know, tried and tested practice of taking on schemes and, you know, a successful investment strategy. But there would need to be significant change and, you know, likely, I think they were saying, a new vehicle in order to provide for that. So lots to see and lots to hear about.
That's right. And when you think about the PPF's existing model, of course, is a simplified benefit structure. And often, yes, you know, the challenge for this consolidation is actually, can you, if it was the PPF, can you deal with all of these different types of benefit structures in an efficient way? Now, where I think things get really interesting is if we almost try and pull all of these ideas together. So if you're the government and you're wanting investment productive finance, and that's UK productive finance, even if schemes can run on, as a trustee, I need to invest for the best interest of my members, not the best interest of the country. So when I look at my investment strategy, if I run on and I've got an allocation to productive finance, well, that's an allocation of my assets. Yeah. And when we think about how many of those will be actually UK specific, well, it's an even smaller slice. Yeah. Now, there's an argument that a slice of the pie is better than no pie. But in my mind, if the government really wants to incentivize more investment in UK assets, it needs to compensate schemes for the diversification benefits they're given up by not going global. So what I'd be really excited about.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be really excited if there was some sort of form of, you know, public option with perhaps a crown guarantee
that
could allow trustees to get comfortable in terms of security and members' benefits, but at the same time facilitate a way to actually have more of these assets to help boost the UK growth.
That would be really interesting. And a point for discussion would be what thresholds or conditions are there in order to be able to transfer to an entity that has the crown guaranteeing liabilities behind it. Yeah.
But maybe
you could come up with funding levels, couldn't you? Sorry, go on.
Yeah, well, exactly. You could sort of work out actually what's the right funding level to get in this point so that the risk of the guarantee biting is fairly small, but actually at the same time there's upside. And you know, there are examples out there of crown guarantees on particular schemes. Yes. If you looked at something like the mine workers pension scheme, back at privatization, they had a crown guarantee. Mm-hmm. Because the trustees have that, they can follow a different type of investment approach. Yeah. And I think over the 30 years since privatization, we've seen members' benefits in that scheme being increased by about 30% and several billion pounds going back to the government in terms of a refund of surplus. So there is potentially a blueprint out there. I guess the difference would be that, you know, but you're suggesting, Chris, there'd be a high funding hurdle to get into this scheme, whereas when the mine workers was privatised, it was a lower starting point. Yeah.
So Douglas, what do you think happens next? On. What do you think of the timescales? Do you think this is going to be a long and slow process to get to the change, or are there some immediate steps that are happening?
I think the first step is, as we sort of alluded to, and then Chris mentioned the autumn statement coming up shortly. It will just be interesting, given the King's Speech was very silent on this matter, what will be said in the statement. But equal on the flip side, I guess we did see Rachel Reeves in the papers this week again, explaining that she would expect big pension reforms if there was a change of government. So I think, you know, step one, we receive what's said on Thursday, and then whatever would follow after that. I think for me, I hope it's not a long drawn out process, because the rate of movement of assets from the pensions framework to insurance framework is rapid. And so if there is a real desire to make a change, we need clear guidance and we need it quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Douglas, that's been a fascinating discussion. And I feel as if we could have done the whole series on, you know, these proposals for investing in the UK and the future of DB pensions. And, you know, we can only really scratch the surface in this podcast episode. But hopefully that's been, I'm sure it will have been really interesting for our listeners. And it's been really good talking with you.
Chris, Helen, lovely talking to you as well. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Burgess Salmon Pensions Pod. If you want to listen to any of our previous episodes, take a look on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for listening.